You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
And Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis
oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City SC. I'm your host, Nate Morales, joined as always by my co-host, the newly minted assistant sporting director of Minneapolis City, Mr. John Bizworm. John, hard to believe given the impending snowmageddon, but we are just about in the home stretch of the offseason, and very soon, lower league soccer will return to the Nelly. How are those rosters looking?
They're looking good, man. I mean, they're coming together. I think the main thing is depth, and we're gonna talk about that later today as far as what the continuation of the roster makeup looks like. But it's more of like creating those position battles. Like last year, I don't know if you agree with me or disagree with me, but there was a lot of times where it was like a makeshift player has to play in this spot, or if this guy goes down, then we don't have there's a gap in what happens, you know, beyond that player on the roster. So I think it's looking good. I think we're kind of solidifying some things. There's going to be a combine that's happening this weekend, a spring break combine that I think will be where a lot of the final decisions are made. And then coming out of that, I think we're going to lock up, and then what'll cascade from top down would be then what are the 21s and then followed by the 19s look like. And then ultimately, who are the players that are identified as the gap players at each age level that will be the core of who moves up and down based off of need? So sure. I think it's going pretty well. I really think that it's a little bit of a different approach than we took a swing at things last year. I'm not saying by any means my limited involvement at the back end of the roster forming is the secret sauce, but I'm starting to see a little bit of how we formulated roster depth in the past. So really good stuff. But for today's show, we have quite the mix of content this week. So speaking of roster building, the player announcements are still rolling in, so why not highlight them? So we're going to cover off on a portion of the players that were announced the last few weeks since we met. We're also going to talk about the Minnesota Super Cup. The participants for 2024 are out now. We'll talk about those in a little bit of detail. And then we mentioned it last week. We are going to dive deep into the Futures League and give an update on what's been happening for the young end of the programming and ultimately the championships that are happening this Friday, depending upon when you're listening to this.
Yeah. But before we get into all that, John, the U.S. Open Cup kicked off this week, and we have already, I would say, been treated to like a bang up start. Unfortunately, our friends at Tulsa Athletic were dropped by the Hailstorm, which I feel is a far inferior band to Evanescence, but that's all right. But we did get a few iconic victories. First of all, my favorite team from the Green Mountain State, Vermont Green, snagged their first Open Cup win of their existence against Lexington, a city that I used to live in and has a lot of horses. And my favorite team, named after a Mexican restaurant in San Francisco, El Farolito, beat the Timbers MLS Next Pro team. Austin's MLS Next team lost too. And we also saw Sasha
Kleshton
make an appearance in the box score for the Des Moines Menace. So this
John captained the team and played the whole game.
This is why I love the cup. And I'm actually kind of glad that most MLS teams are going to be fielding their youth teams. The magic won't be ruined quite yet. Those crazy results could go on and on this spring, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, I mean, let me just kind of talk about a couple things at the Open Cup. I did watch a handful of games. I saw Duluth get whacked by Madison. That was super cool. but my number one thing on the list of things to talk about for the Open Cup was, number one, that Menace game. It was delayed because they showed up at the field and the high school lacrosse team was practicing. And they wouldn't get off the field.
They're just like, no, we have the field.
This is our time. Which, that's so great, right? Like, you don't get that when you have, you know, El Florito rolling up to, you know, Portland Timbers Stadium. You don't have that. You have a different side of it, like the glamour side, like I'm playing in a pro stadium. But what better way, if that would have been like, you know, Minnesota United turned up to play us, and we were at, you know, in Burnsville or something like that.
Like, won't leave the field.
Right. Yeah. Like the girls field hockey team wouldn't get off, you know, like something like that. So I thought that was pretty cool. You mentioned the Sasha Kleshin thing. I thought it was really cool. There's a really neat article about, you know, him saying how much he loved the U.S. Open Cup as a player in the MLS. And, you know, now that he's not tied to Major League Soccer from a playing perspective, he wanted to play. And then I thought it was funny. He like tweeted out a picture of like an Amazon order for a walker and was like, I'm going to need one of these tomorrow. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I also thought like the main thing for me, the main takeaway was the MLS Next sides not necessarily being able to compete in certain matches against NPSL teams, UPSL teams, teams that are clearly the nose is turned down upon from up high. And you're seeing these MLS Next programs that have been in training camp for weeks, if not a month or two, or maybe even more than that, that are should be fit. And from a talent perspective, if the MLS is doing what it says it's supposed to be doing, should be rolling these teams right out of the park. But they're not. And you're seeing that the parity level from talent that's at the non-professional level or the pre-professional level, the parity's closing, man. And that's, I think, was one of those things that maybe scares MLS a little bit. But if I'm MLS, I'm super pissed that these teams aren't winning those games handily. I think Minnesota United too was the only one that actually won a game.
New York Red Bulls.
Oh, did the was that today?
That won? It might have been tonight. Yeah, they. I think they beat the shit out of their opponent.
So 2 out of 5?
Yeah.
That's not a good percentage for a soccer monopoly.
Not great, Bob.
in my opinion. I just wish we were in it. You know, that would have been great. But we're in a different cup that we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
That's right. Well, let's get to let's get to the players. Because last show, John, we profiled the first big round of roster announcements. And since then, we have seen the players just keep rolling through the old social media account. It feels like every day on Instagram, there's a new announcement. Hard to keep up. Another big group has been announced that we haven't covered. I would say interesting that there are some old faces. But for me, TBH, a few more new faces than I was expecting this year. So let's get going. I'll introduce some of these players. You tell me what you know about them, because you know, a couple, especially with the new guys, I'm not that familiar. But we'll start with the familiar face. We'll start with Curtis Wagner. He's a center back. He's a returning player from last year. He's wrapping up his junior year at Loyola, and that's Chicago, not LA, right?
I believe. No, it's not Loyola Chicago. It's the other one.
It's Loyola Marymount?
I think it's just Loyola. They're in the Patriot League. Oh. So we'll do some research on that, and we'll come back. I know they're in the Patriot League. But yeah, like you mentioned, Curtis is coming into his second season with the Crows. He's starting to see minutes in a very competitive Patriot League. I think from a soccer perspective, a lot of people don't realize how strong the Patriot League really is. And he didn't see a lot of time his freshman year, which would have been before last summer. But this past year he saw a lot more minutes at the center back, and they played like their non-conference games against like North Carolina and West Virginia. They played like top 10 teams. And he got some significant minutes in those games, as well as a handful of minutes against some really good Patriot League competition. But Curtis is a big defender. And I don't think we've kind of had that prototypical big hulking defender since back in the old days with Old Faithful, Trey Benhart anchoring the back line. So it was nice to see Curtis come in last year. He did come in late due to injury, and I thought he really impressed before he saw the wrong side of the referee's book twice. So
yeah.
He comes in late, makes his appearance, gets a red card, then he's out for a game, and then he gets back into the team, and then he gets a red card. And I think maybe one of those was potentially warranted, but either way, you know, Curtis is your prototypical, you know, bigger center back that, that clearly doesn't shy away from a tackle.
Yeah. If I remember right, one of his red cards was away at Thunder Bay, right?
Yep.
Yeah. He was second kind of second yellow, late challenge on a breakaway. And that's all right. We still pulled together, gutted out that draw. If Curtis
he actually got points out of both times he got sent off. Yeah. So maybe, like, I don't know.
I don't want to say keep it up, but if Curtis can contribute consistently, he's a great presence to have on the back line, a great option back there.
Yep.
Especially given that, you know, Nick Kent unproven at this level, and it's hard for everyone to make all the trips. So it'll be good.
Yep.
Good to have this depth, as you already mentioned. Depth is key.
Depth is key.
All right, up next, we've got another returning player. It's Carson Pena. He's kind of played outside back. He's a junior at the Campbell Camels, the Fighting Camels.
The Fighting Camels, yep. Carson's in his second year with the Crows, first and foremost, has fantastic hair. I think he had three different hairstyles with us last summer. Maybe we'll see three more. I thought he started off a little bit slow, kind of finding his feet at the USL2 level. But once he did, it was really hard to kind of keep that name out of the team sheet. And he's kind of built in more of your modern day wingback profile. You know, short, stocky, quick. You know, looks to get forward and up forward, but also obviously keeping a mind on his defensive duties as an outside back. And then I think that he started as he got comfortable on the defensive side of things. You saw him get a little bit more involved on the offensive side of the ball that last season, and that's something I think that I'm looking forward to seeing if he's continued to add to his game, because I think a lot of the Carl Craig system, it does depend on getting numbers forward quickly. And if you can get that outside back present forward, you just create those numbers, advantages, and problems for the opposition.
Yeah, year one, we saw that in Xavier Zenge, right? As soon as he started getting forward, all of a sudden we looked a lot different in and around the box. So if Carson can start that early, that'd be great. Also, I think he was better without the hair last year.
You know, maybe.
You gotta make changes. Gotta make changes to change the mindset.
You got to.
He shortened his hair up and was super successful. So we'll see how he shows up this year. Next up, new face, Adam Senna, a junior from VMI, and he's a defender from VMI is the Virginia Military Institute, John. That's a first for us.
Actually, it's a second, to be honest, because that's where Wes Lawrence came from.
No.
Yep. And honestly, after I describe Adam...
He transferred from VMI to St. Thomas?
Correct.
Oh. Yep.
Yep. So after I describe Adam, you're gonna see some traits that are similar to Wes. So this is his first year officially with the club. Last year, he actually was a futures trialist, and he was rated as the highest player on the coach's eval sheets. Every coach had him rated as the highest player coming into the futures trials, but he chose to stay back at school over the summer and never made it back home. He started over half of VMI's games over the past two seasons at outside back. And here's where a little bit of that Wes Lawrence comes in. Maybe not the first part, no offense, Wes, but the second part. So this guy is like off the charts from an athleticism perspective. Like he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's well-built. He has a forever engine that's like literally always on. And he has that Wes Lawrence piece now. And maybe it's a VMI trait, that never quit attitude, which is absolutely perfect for an outside back, because at the outside back position, most times than not, you're on an island and you get beat often, and it's how you recover from getting beat that shows your success from a defensive perspective. And he absolutely has it. And I'm excited to see him come in. I thought that, you know, he could have actually been in the conversation for joining the first team squad back when he was trialing with the Futures, but it just never worked out.
Wow. Well, that's not bad for a guy studying at the military home of Confederate traitors.
I knew you were going to go there.
No, but I think you're right. Maybe it is something, maybe it is a VMI thing. Maybe it's just a military school thing, but you know, it's definitely an attitude. There's definitely an attitude there with Wes. And if Adam can, duplicate that, or as you've described it, like improve on that, mm-hmm. solid. I mean, Wes was so good for us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we always talked about Wes, like Wes knew his limitations. And I think that the difference between the two is that Adam has a little bit more on like the, this is going to sound like I'm ripping into Wes, and I'm not, I promise. A little bit more of the on the ball skill, like the individual skill. So like the ability to maybe get out of a sticky situation with the ball, where sure. Wes more was on like just like the diehard defender side of things. I'm really excited to have Adam in the mix. I think that everyone's going to really, especially around here, everyone's really going to like his work ethic, and he kind of embodies the support local theme.
Cool. That's great. Up next, Daniel Sessler, new guy.
Sess man.
The Sess man. New guy. He's a goalkeeper for St. Mary's down in Winona, and here he is joining the Crows.
He's a recent graduate, first year with the Crows. Like you mentioned, comes via St. Mary's, and he actually came to us through the open trial process. And so I'll just put it this way. Well, I'll get to it in a second. At school for St. Mary's, he had some accolades over his 4 years in Winona. He was a two-time MIAC honorable mention. He was a one-time first-team All-MIAC selection. He won a handful of MIAC Player of the Week honors throughout his four-year career. Yep. And currently, from a statistic perspective at St. Mary's, he ranks in the top two all-time in seven goalkeeping categories from a records perspective, and is top five in four others. So definitely did his job. I think that one thing that he didn't get a lot of help was is that a lot of the, and maybe this is what kind of battle tested him. Mm-hmm. He didn't play on a lot of great teams there. So the back line in front of him, no disrespect to the people that played in front of him, it was just not strong. So he faced a lot of shots, and he was tested very often. So as far as a makeup goes, he's a huge dude. 6'3 plus, I think. He has great instincts, and I'd say he has plus level foot skills for a goalkeeper. So I know that's something that that Coach Craig and the staff really looks for out of their goalkeepers, is being able to play out of the back. And I think that he has a little more of that than we maybe have seen in the not too recent history. And here's where I start talking about a little bit more of like who he is as a, you know, the psychosocial makeup of the Sess man.
Yeah.
He reminds me of basically just a taller, quieter version of Matt Elder.
Interesting.
So, both in like goalkeeping style and also his dedication to wanting to be part of this club. And what I mean by that is during the open trial process, he was still finishing up school, and he still is finishing up school in Winona. So that's like, what is that? A 2 hour drive, hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah. It's pretty far.
He came down, you know, did the trip both ways. And then over the course of the winter tryout, the winter combine, very similar to what we're going to have here on Sunday for the spring break combine, he basically just got a hotel room and stayed here to be part of it, to try to get his opportunity. And that's the type of person you want in the club. You know, when you're looking at the trial sheet and you see a guy making that type of effort, and a guy who maybe isn't, but their skills are very close, and maybe the other guy is a little bit higher, you tend to kind of go with the guy who's all in. And Daniel is definitely it. I'm super excited to have him.
That's phenomenal. I ran into Pucci out and about at an MTE game. He was doing some scouting, probably for the Futures, and he was just raving about Daniel and how he's developed even since the start of the fall season. And, mm-hmm. you know, John himself has been working to transform that St. Mary's team, just like Tyler over at Hamlin. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of these new coaches are trying to figure out how to adjust to the St. Olaf juggernaut. And, And I think that the results kind of show, like you said, he's had a really good season this year. First team All MIAC, which is phenomenal. And St. Mary's is one of those teams that's gonna get better. And it's too bad that they're gonna have to get better without Daniel. Good luck.
Right. Yeah.
Up next, John, another goalkeeper in the room, which I think makes four, is Jack Roach. He's the goalkeeper, redshirt freshman this year at Wisconsin, and another guy that kind of has been hanging around Minneapolis City, but hasn't quite made it official.
Yeah, so another first-year player, and if you remember the name, it's because he was a standout in the Minnesota Super Cup for Minnesota United FC's U19 team, and then also did see some roster action with Minnesota United FC 2, but did not feature in any of their matches, but was in and out of their dressing room. He also did not see any action with the Badgers this year, and I think it'll likely be considered as more of a redshirt year. I don't know that officially, but I'd have to guess if you're a freshman and you don't play, you're going to be a redshirt freshman the following year. But we'll see. But overall, his makeup, a lot like Daniel, a bigger guy, but obviously hasn't had 4 years of a college weight room to help him fill out. So a little bit more on the slender side. And he's a fantastic shot stopper, and has great positioning from a goalkeeping perspective. Whether it's commanding the box or understanding the angles, he's very technical that way. But I also see him in the small sample size I did see of him, and I kind of call him more of like a volume save maker, where he makes the first one, but he's also dependent upon the work that the defenders do in front of him. He's quick to react to make the second save. So if he isn't hanging on to the ball, and it's more of a deflection
quick to get save, up.
He's quick Reset. To get up. Yep. And he knows where to go once he gets up. So that's a really hard thing to teach. So yeah. I'm not quite sure how the goalkeeping room this summer is going to sort itself out with already having three or four. I don't remember if we, oh yeah, we did announce Evan. So having four Evan goalkeepers, mm-hmm. What's that?
I said, yeah, Evan and Gabe.
Yep. So Evan, Gabe, Daniel, and Jack, that's one more than we had last year. And two more consistently than we had last year.
I was going to say, like, yeah, it's four goalkeepers, but I think we could have used all four last year.
Right, exactly. So bringing in volume quality is always good. So I'm not quite sure how the room's going to shake itself out with the volume we have, but maybe Jack is that, and maybe even Gabe too is that pool type keeper who gets some time with the 21s if they don't take the, you know, either a share or control of the number one spot.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happened last year with Siefkin, right? Is like played with the 21s, proved that, my God, this guy is phenomenal between the sticks. So let's give him the call up. And he finished the season super strong.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. One of those things, it's probably better to have more options rather than get stuck scrambling for coverage. And like Always. The Minnesota Super Cup starts early. So you never know who's going to be available for that.
Right, exactly. And another thing to think about, too, is that, like, the goalkeeping position, and we've talked to a bunch of different goalkeepers on this show in the 200-plus, 50-plus episodes we've had, and they all talk about how it is difficult because there's only one. And whoever comes in 1B is still not going to play. And you have to also think about it another level down, that there are just some goalkeepers that they are career training goalkeepers. And that's just the way of the business. And I think that we haven't really had like a full goalkeeper room like this mm-hmm. before, where some of the conversations from the coaching staff might have to be had where it's like, this is a great opportunity for you to stay sharp for when you go back to where you came from, whether it be college or whatever, or your next step. To keep you sharp, but you know it truly is a fight, and if you don't win the fight, then you still have to compete, and it's better to have those conversations early than it is to just not have them at all, because there really is only one guy, and you want that one guy to have be rock solid from a mental perspective because yeah. of just the nature of their position.
Yeah. Up next, last player for tonight. Another new guy, Juan Moreno, an attacking center midfielder. He's a junior at Oral Roberts, which always to me feels like an orthodontic school.
Yeah, or it's just kind of one of those schools that has a dirty name to it. You know, if you're a basketball fan right now, you have like Longwood College or Longwood University. You have Morehead State.
They got eliminated already.
Yeah, it's all that. You throw Oral Roberts in that. But anyways, Juan, first year player with the Crows, he makes his way to Minnesota for an internship, but comes as a referral from our good friends at Tulsa Athletic, where he was on their roster for the 23 national championship run that they had. At school, he was an All-Summit League first team selection. In his sophomore season last year, he started 16 out of 17 games. He accumulated 5 goals and 3 assists, which was good for 11 points. That was tied for second on the team, well behind their striker, who had like something like 35 points or something like that. The guy was like the all conference player of the year. but being a center midfielder and tying for second in points is definitely a good output. Juan's basically your classic, in my opinion, hybrid between like a number 10 attacking midfielder and then a box to box number 8. He has a short build, but he's extremely quick. And the ball just sticks to this guy's feet. And he has that passing vision to unlock things in the offensive third, but he also has the ability to create his own opportunities, and has shown from a college perspective and with Tulsa Athletic that he can find the back of the net, which is great. And I don't think that, you know, no disrespect to the other attacking center midfielders we've had, maybe Luke was... The small sample size of Luke was probably the last person that we did have that could do this. But maybe even since Martin Brown, that individual can unlock a game with a single pass, converting off of a free kick, or that mind bending, you know, 2 to 3 touches to beat a handful of defenders and then rip a shot with either foot. So yep. I'm really excited to see Juan come in and see how, you know, he adopts Minnesota. And how he ends up adopting who we are. I think we're very close to what he had at Tulsa Athletic, so I think that transition will be nice. But he'll be away from home. He's a Bogota, Colombia native. So luckily he's coming here during the summer and not the winter. So really excited about Juan.
Yeah, it'll be nice if, as advertised, he's able to exhibit that passing vision, because I think, like you said, some of these guys we've had at the 10 or even the 8 have been more interested maybe in beating someone on the dribble with mm-hmm. maybe try some flash first versus move the ball, move the opposition, as my man Pepperoni would say. Of course, John, there's going to be even more players announced. There are more than this that have been announced, and more will be announced every week. So stay tuned here to learn more about the entire team ahead of our May kickoff. Now, John, the surprise hit of last summer was the Minnesota Super Cup. When we saw the draw last year, we kind of expected it to go one way. But in its first year, it saw upsets. It saw drama. Ultimately, it all led to Med City lifting the trophy. Now, except for that result, that pretty much is what you want out of a first-year tournament to grab people's attention, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I think for me, there was a little bit of disappointment. I thought we had the team, even as we limped into the end of the knockout rounds. You know, pantsing Duluth was always fun. it is and always will be fun.
Yeah, it never gets old.
It never gets old, no. But, you know, getting knocked out by Med City, you know, at the death on some defensive miscues, having to kind of go into that with a lot of futures players instead of the players who I thought that left for school early probably would have changed the complexity of that game. But I really do think we had it. But as far as how the tournament went, I don't think there was a negative thing said about the tournament. I could be wrong, but I don't think I heard one personally. And, you know, if you look at the final, it was a great final. And, you know, Med City did what they had to do to win the cup. And I think there's some changes that are being added to this year's cup that I think make the premise of the cup being almost like the state tournament of adult amateur soccer at the pre-professional level. I think it's going to make it even better. So the clubs.
Yeah, so who's in it this year? Because it's a little bit of a mix up, but not much. I mean, this year we actually had a real qualification, right? I think last year, I can't remember how they picked, but basically it was just generally the top teams in the state in from past results. But now it's like real qualification. You had to finish well in your league. Mm-hmm. Who is it?
Yeah. I mean, I last year, our old friends over at Joy Athletics sure had some things to say about not being included. Yes, the qualification process did happen. And part of that qualification process, and I mentioned like some new things of the cup, was giving a spot to the top men's amateur league, the MASL, giving the opportunity for the champion to accept a bid as being a qualifier throughout the summer. But if they were unable to do it, which is what happened this year, the runner-up took it. So the runner-up from the MASL, Force FC, which traditionally I believe was like is kind of a makeup of a little bit of Bethel, a little bit of U of M players from the U of M club team, and then Bethel's varsity team that is coached by our good buddy the Soccer Buddha. So the Force FC, they made it for the MASL. The slot for the NPSL was not taken up by Duluth FC. They won the league this past year, but completely fell down in the playoffs, as we saw. Then from an MLS Next perspective, really it's a two-horse race between Minnesota United's U19s and Shattuck St. Mary's. So Minnesota United finished higher and qualified for that. And then the three slots for the two slots for USL2 go to Rochester FC and St. Croix for finishing highest in the Minnesota side in that table. And then Minneapolis City, we qualified through the UPSL slot. But also, as everyone knows, we do operate out of the USL2 as well. So that's the makeup of this year's cup. As a reminder, it's a table of two tables of three teams. The winner of each group gets in. And I believe there is a semifinal, but I don't remember how that all works. But the second place teams, I think, play each other to face the winner of each group.
So, question, John, how is the Super Cup going to handle us? Because, you know, like you said, we qualified as a UPSL team. And we got to assume we're going to be limited to using a U21 roster, right?
Well, I honestly don't know, but if I had to guess, that it's going to have to be a hybrid. And you know, you can have a hybrid. It's not necessarily all down to you can only use players from a specific league, but they do have to be rostered in the league. So we did talk about how there's going to be a combine happening over the spring break period here, where the final rosters are going to kind of get shaken out, and that goes across all levels. So we mentioned the fringe players that might be some players on the bottom half of the USL2 roster that may need to see time at the UPSL level. And then ultimately some of the 19s that will, warrant the bump up to the 21. So I could see it as being a hybrid roster of the three programs, but we'll have to find out.
Okay. It feels not super fair especially for clubs like us or St. Croix that can field multiple levels of mm-hmm. teams, right? To be like, we'll just play whoever's around. Like, especially if the point of qualifying is you have to do well in your league. Like, I feel like in all fairness, it should kind of be limited to players that either, you know, that play in that league, at least for the majority of the season. I understand that there's movement, you know, and like some guys might get called up from UPSL to USL2, but for the most part, I don't know. That's just my thought on it, but who knows? I'm just saying that, like, thinking eventually St. Croix is going to be the one that qualifies out of the UPSL, and we're going to be like, what are these senior players doing running up against us? They can't be here. So I don't know. It's a fun tournament.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tricky situation, but I mean, if I'm speaking for our club, I mean, we might just have to have a hybrid of things, but realistically speaking, the earlier rounds of the cup are when the most college players aren't back anyways, unless they're in town or they've already exhausted their eligibility.
Yeah.
So, you know, creating a roster like that, the parity will be across other USL2 teams as well, or other NPSL or UPSL slots. So
that's a good point.
But I agree with you to just like roll out the best players in the club because you can. That seems a little bit interesting, but I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. Groups and schedules have not been released yet on the website for Minnesota Super Cup, but we'll be sure to cover that as soon as we hear more. Really excited to see what those matchups are going to look like.
All right. Well, final segment of the show here. It's been some time since we last talked about the Futures program, so we're well overdue to spend some time on what's been going on with them. And gosh darn it, that time is now, Nate.
Gosh darn it.
For those
of
you who... people like us. for those of you who only know the Futures program as the summer team or teams now this year playing in the UPSL, the process really does start with the winter portion of the program. And the program is broken out like this. There's about 115 players split across two age groups, 21 and 19s, and they begin training immediately after the high school and college seasons are over once trials have concluded. And then they train together for about 5 to 6 weeks. And then once that training period's over, then they compete in a 7v7 league format for the next 6 weeks. And that includes the 4 weeks of regular play and then the semifinals and finals. And each team is named after a Minnesota neighborhood. So for the 21s, the four neighborhoods are Victory, Longfellow, Nokomis, and Powderhorn. And then for the 19s, it's Ventura Village, Camden, Hiawatha, and then Cedar Riverside. So as far as the league goes, stats are kept for Golden Boot, Wingman, so top assist man, and then Golden Gloves for the best goalkeeper. And then the group that competes in the winter session is then evaluated for the summer rosters. And in the 21s case, they are then coupled with the out-of-town college players that are not back yet, that are planning to come back for the summer. But in the 19s case, we're trying to field a full new team. So that really truly is the location for us to identify the talent, on top of things like the open trial process and any other, you know, lingering players that do trickle in, which we know we have every year.
Yeah. The beauty, I think, John, with this group of guys, both on the U21 and U19 level, is that they come from some really diverse backgrounds. You've got guys who are wrapping up their freshman year at like MIAC schools that are able to come out every week, and they're putting in the work maybe to break through next year. And they're playing next to guys that like aren't in school, like Karen guys, or high school seniors. Tons of players from diverse soccer backgrounds. You've got big clubs like MTA. You got mid-level clubs like Helix. You even got guys that have come through and rep the Joy of the People free play model like Griffin or Kai. So really, really cool that they've all been playing together and developing their game together week in, week out.
Yep, absolutely. So as far as how things are going, this is championship week.
Yeah, you know, a lot of I want to mention there's been a lot of parity, right? Like I think especially on the U19 level, two teams won two games, the other two teams won one, and it all, you know, it's super easy, and they only won by like two goals each, right? It's just like the skill level at the U19 level, you guys did a really good job of choosing these guys. The parity is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, there was some question around that as far as the selection process of the teams, but I do think for both age groups it did kind of, you know, iron itself out once the players actually got on the field. From a 21s perspective, the number 3 seed, Nokomis, shocked the world, beating the number 1 seed, and they take on number 2 seed, Powderhorn. And then the 19s, we saw another shock. The 4 seed, Ventura, plays the number 2 seed, Camden. So it'll be really, really great matchups this coming Friday. And if you're a member of the club, meaning you've already bought a season ticket for 2024, and you've seen the communication that the club sent out, they're offering a first-come, first-served set of 25 slots to come watch the finals this coming Friday at Winter Park, starting at 6:30 for the 21s and 8:30 for the 19s. If you didn't see that, you can head on over to the club's X account, and you can see all the information. You can click on the link, and you can get signed up if there are still spots available. But as the performance side of things go, there's some players that are really lighting up the league, Nate. And we have some statistics compiled by yours truly here after just poring over an Excel spreadsheet for about 2 hours. We do know who the Golden Boot front runner is, the wingman and the goalkeeper for each of the age groups. So we'll start off with 21. What's that?
It's all worth it.
It is all worth it, you know, and these the fruits of my labor will be used for many generations. So from a Golden Boot perspective, who's lighting up the score sheet right now for Powderhorn? It's a familiar name. It's Jordan Ross. He currently sits at 8 goals. And then there is just a glut of players that are sitting behind him tied at 6. Johnny Bear from Longfellow, Nels Mortensen, and Elijah Faring from Longfellow. And most of these names people have heard of, maybe not so much Nels Mortensen, unless you follow high school soccer. He was, I believe, the state player of the year, and then Elijah Faring, who you know well, out in Woodbury, correct?
Yep.
So an opportunity if Jordan doesn't keep his hot form for any number of these three, or someone who just has a wonder day and scores a bucket full of goals. But from an assist perspective, another name that you've heard of, Alvaro Arce from Powderhorn, sits on 4 goals, as is Jordan Ross. But your leader out of the clubhouse is Longfellow member Johnny Bear. So Johnny doing it on both ends. And then from a goalkeeping perspective, Gold Gloves, another name that'll be familiar that folks have heard on this here show, that's Gustavus goalkeeper Dylan Ellers for Powderhorn, who currently sits on 33 saves, followed by Bodine Gosted from Victory, who sits at 27. And then for the 19s, definitely names you have not heard of, but start making notes now. From a Golden Boot perspective, 3 players currently sit on 8 goals. That's CJ Tree from Hiawatha, Thomas Laxinen from Camden, Ethan Lemoyne from Camden, and Julian Browers Nelson from Riverside, who rounds it out with 5 goals. And then from an assist perspective, Julian climbs up that list, and he currently sits in a tied at the top spot with Jabari. I'm so bad with names.
I think it's Kiwisu.
Kiwisu. From Hiawatha, and then Danny Burgo from Hiawatha sits at 4. And then from a goalkeeping perspective, a complete tie in saves with Javier Rivland from Hiawatha at 31, and then Zach Breland from Camden at 31.
Yeah. Really cool, too. This is the thing that I like about the Futures League, especially as we add this U19 crew, John, is you get this window into what's going on with high school juniors and seniors, right? And to be like, oh, who is Julian Broward Nelson? Who is Jabari?
And CJ Tree.
CJ Tree, I actually do want to know who he is. The only, I know Julian, I know Jabari from back in the Joy of the People days. I do not know, and I know Ethan Lemoyne from De La Salle. I do not know CJ or Thomas Laxinen. So I'm excited to watch them on Friday for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think now, John, the hard part comes, and it's hard probably for you and Josh, Scotty, MVB. You got to sort these guys out, and you got to put together strong teams for the summer, and that's no easy task because, like you said, 115 or so guys, a little less than half of that are probably going to be asked to play in the UPSL at both levels.
Mm-hmm.
Probably way less now that I think about like the college guys that might be coming back and pushing guys down from the U21 level to maybe
U19. I think there's maybe like 41, 42 spots in totality for both teams that are open, with probably, you know, upwards of 30 for starting a new team in the 19s, and then the remainder being in the 21s. So not a lot of opportunity, but that's okay. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that all these players who did the job to make the winter session have to be invited into the summer session. It's starting to get some of these players into an environment where they have to fight for things, and they're not given opportunities. They have to earn them, which is great for a high school junior, senior to start to get in that environment, because they're going to be going off to college if they choose to do that, to play, and they're going to go right back into being the low man on the totem pole.
Yep. So as those teams come together, we're going to be covering the rosters and the schedules as they're announced too. And we're going to be, you and I are going to be covering those games all summer. Yeah. One more point real quick, if I may. And it's that you and I last year discovered this. We highly encourage fans to come out and watch those UPSL games. I think, you know, they might not get the crowds that the USL 2 team does, but man, everyone we talk to, whether it's Paul who shows up, Brian, you know, any citizen that'll pop in and just to check these games out, they're hooked. They tell us about how fun it is to watch the next generation of Crows kind of grow before your eyes and just ball out against the competition. And these teams are good, man. They can compete at the levels that we put them out at, and they do really well. So it's super fun. You know, the guys are excited to play. We'll be excited to put on that city kit and to wear the badge, and it'll be great for them as young players to get some of that city love behind them. So highly encouraged for people to come out and check them out. Of course, like I said, we'll learn more about when to do that coming up in the next few weeks.
And where.
And where.
Yep. Where's always the key thing. Well, that does it for this week's show, folks. Thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. Our friends at footballstadiumprints.com are always expanding their soccer-focused t-shirt designs, prints, and more. Do not forget to use the code CROWS10, that's CROWS10, for 10% off of everything you purchase. And remember, all U.S. orders ship right from the United States, so there is no pesky international shipping charges. Gotta hate when those are added on. As a reminder, Minneapolis City is 501c3, so you can feel good about your membership because it doubles as a charitable donation to the club that does good. Memberships for 2024 are on sale right now. Make sure you go over and cement your seat in the stands and get some sweet swag, all for the price that destroys other clubs' price of entry. So head on over to mpls.com and get yours today. And remember, again, tax-deductible donation. So, and you get things like voting rights on important club matters. So please go ahead and do that. Let's pack the stands, not only for the USL2, but also for both UPSL teams this summer. Remember, you can always find us on Twitter X at the People's Pitch, and you can even email us if you have any questions or topics you want us to cover directly at the show to at MPLS or mcscpodcast@gmail.com. Excuse me. Of course, you can also connect to the club on Twitter X at MPLS City SC. So that's all for this week's show, folks. I'm John. That was Nate. We'll take a quick sidestep for spring break. But we'll come back and bring you more player news, an update on the Futures 19 and 21s, as well as anything else city that does pop up. So until next time, you got hope.
You got hope.